Welcome to the final installment of Miller Kane, A True and Exact History, a serialized novel by Samuel Ligon, published for the first time in The Inlander and broadcast by Spokane Public Radio. Miller Kane is made possible by Sprint and The Inlander. Previously on Miller Kane. Miller Kane is dead, shot and killed by a grieving father whose own son was shot and killed by someone else. But someone had to pay, and Miller, having traveled from massacre to massacre selling spiritual inventories and other healing techniques, was as good as any. Carlene will be okay, though. She was just 8 years old when she spent the summer road tripping across the country with Miller. And while Miller hadn't chosen this particular job, taking care of Carlene while her mother, Lizzie James, was stuck in jail for shooting her estranged husband, Connor, he took to it. He and Carlene bonded over history, Waffles the Cat, Laura Ingalls Wilder, Miller's friend Avery, and, in his final days, trying to ease the suffering of America's latest mass shooting. Yes, Carlene will be okay. An heiress, even. Set to inherit a massive fortune from Connor's unscrupulous family. But her time with Miller will leave its mark. Now, here's author Samuel Ligon.
Chapter 8, Part 7. Hero Villain 9, Miller Kane. Without Miller, there would be no Kane Foundation, no 400 billion pound gorilla about to break free, to fight back, to take Senate seats and assault weapons. And whatever we accomplish, whatever change we make it in his name and in the name of every massacre victim this land has seen. Money will be most of it, because we understand who we are and what we're up against. Money is speech, the Supreme Court said. Money doesn't talk, it swears, Miller Kane said, quoting Bob Dylan. He was often quoting somebody, though I didn't realize it then, and didn't know which hero villain said what for years. Our speech will be louder than anyone's, nearly $500 billion worth, convincing senators and congresspeople, governors and presidential candidates, judges and local legislators to do the right thing. And if they don't do the right thing, we'll talk to someone who will. Miller would not have thought this cynical. He was romantic, but he understood that money was more fundamental to our national character than Jesus, even. The religious zealots who arrived on the Mayflower having been financed by the Company of Merchant Adventurers of London. If you want to know what God thinks of money, Miller said, just look at the people he gave it to. Dorothy Parker said that first, but for years I thought Miller had. He loved his country and hated how we failed so consistently to live up to our ideals. But he believed, and he made me believe. The speech I inherited attracted other speech from a software developer, a talk show host, an industrialist, a media mogul, various merchants, investors, hedge fund managers, old speech and new, from patriots who believed we could be better than a nation of murderers and people waiting to be murdered. I gave Connor my allowance until I was 18, when the money became larger and I could give him a little more and keep a little for the foundation. He still lives on it somewhere like a child. And while there's not much good in him, the Kane Foundation would not exist without his family and what they took and ultimately gave to me. Miller would hate his name on the foundation, but he didn't get to choose. I did. And he's dead, so it doesn't matter. I've met survivors he helped, people whose money he took, some of whom have contributed to the foundation, one of whom shot him in the head. He never pretended it was Cammy talking, Bree Dirksen told me, but it was her. There was a spiritual dimension there. He couldn't have known what he knew without a spiritual dimension. No one but her could have known the things she said after she died. Narcissa didn't mean to be awful, he told me at the Whitman Mission. Custer's wife loved him, he told me at the Little Bighorn Battlefield, so we know that somebody did. Jesse James was an asshat, he told me at Zerelda's farm. Several men in our tour group had stars and bars on their belt buckles or caps and gave Miller dirty looks as he told me about Quantrill's Raiders and Bloody Bill Anderson. Horrible people, he said, ideologically bankrupt. They were only in it for the murder, and their methods were horrifying. She doesn't need to hear that, the tour guide said, and Miller said, of course she needs to hear it. So do you. Besides, her mother's a James, which means she is too. She has a right and an obligation to know her own story. Is my mother really a James? I asked after the tour guide walked away, and Miller said, isn't that her name? Yes, but am I related to him? I'm not sure, Miller said. Who knows? He might have added that it didn't make any difference, that we all have something corrupt in us from the past, some of us more than others. But it wasn't all villains. He knew how I felt about Laura, and he loved her as much as I did, because she tried to tell the truth, he said, even when it made her look petty or selfish or small. He tried to tell me the truth, too. You have to at least try to see what happened, he said, and what's happening now. But he lied, too, about my mother shooting Connor, about things that made him money on the circuit, and about anything he thought would hurt me if I knew it too soon. I would have done the same for him. Avery flew into Kansas City after the murder and met us in Springfield. The cops helped him locate the motorhome near Baker Creek, and Waffles was okay. We got a crate, and they let me bring him on the plane. I don't know how anyone survives a massacre. Avery kept the motorhome until the following summer when he showed up in Mount Vernon. It still smelled like Waffles and had all our stuff in it, books and games and Miller's guitar and dozens of dolls. I hadn't made one since Cedar Creek, but I made one that summer with Miller's barrel chest and belly and a sparkle in his eye like he was about to say something someone would regret, but probably not him. Right after we visited Little Bighorn, we went to a canyon in Utah on BLM land, the most remote place I've ever been. We drove miles over rutted roads to get there. A stream ran through an abandoned Mormon orchard, and the walls of the canyon were covered with pictographs I copied into my notebook. Wispy, long-bodied people with wings or horns or antenna, plus goats and deer and lizards, beautiful images from pre-Columbian America before it was America. I was heartbroken about Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse and Black Buffalo Woman and the Indian baby Laura had wanted. I didn't want any of it to be true and made Miller tell me everything he knew over and over, which he did, about Sand Creek and Wounded Knee, the American Indian Movement and Leonard Peltier, the ghost dance and boarding schools, all the treaties signed and broken. But he also took me to those petroglyphs. We stayed the night near that orchard, far from artificial light except our own. I'd never seen stars like that, so many, so bright, and Miller taught me what I believed were constellations until I realized years later that he was making them up, that there wasn't a Muddy Waters or John Brown or Sacagawea constellation, though I saw them that night. He saw them everywhere, great Americans, failed Americans, and he made me see them too. And he sang about them and taught me the songs. John Brown's body lies a moldering in the grave, he sang. I've been a moonshiner, he sang, 17 long years. When first unto this country, he sang, a stranger I came. Ain't no more Cain on the Brazos, he sang. Puff the Magic Dragon, he sang. His truth is marching on. That summer went on and on. Even as we got farther away, I believed I would be okay, and I was. The massacre was just so awful, of course, but he let me help, taught me to help, taught me that the only way to get better was to help. I didn't think I'd ever be okay again. Avery was there, and my mom, and they got rid of Connor, and we talked about the money and what to do with it. it would be a long time before I got most of it. Enough time to go to school and more school and more school, studying history like Miller and Avery. Enough time to gather the other money, all of which would become the Kane Foundation's speech, which would say, you can stop these massacres and you don't have to lose any amendment in stopping them. You'll only become better. He didn't like rich people, but he liked to spend money. And it wasn't really the people he didn't like. It was the idea of them taking too much, part of our corruption. He liked to be on the way somewhere, to a rodeo, the Corn Palace, the Keys, Plymouth Rock. He loved my mother, but she didn't love him as much as he loved her. I can't blame her. You can't help who you love. Look at Libby Custer. I have everything he wrote when we were together, the hero villains, plus so many of his thoughts about us, his struggle to figure out what to do with me, how to love and raise me. He never lost hope, even though there was so much horror. He believed in the American experiment, and if he didn't fight as hard as he might have or should have, I'm fighting now because of him, because of myself. I know how proud he'd be of me, as I am of him. He was a good man, a good American. He was my father.
That was the final installment of Miller Kane, A True and Exact History, a novel by Samuel Ligon, published in weekly installments by The Inlander, with archived audio at SpokanePublicRadio.org/MillerKane. Our theme music is by Indian Goat. I'm your producer, Chris Messini. The Inlander will be hosting a free Miller Kane rap party this evening, August 22nd, 7 p.m. at the Big Dipper in Spokane. Author Samuel Ligon will read from the book and talk with best-selling author Jess Walter about Miller Kane and the process of writing a serial novel. Plus, music by Ba Lonely. If you want to get caught up with Miller Kane, you can now find it as a podcast on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, or the NPR One app. Just search for Miller Kane and hit subscribe.